Lecture 9, The JFK Assassination, The Mother of All Conspiracy Theories. On November 22, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. In response, President Lyndon Johnson assembled a Blue Ribbon Commission of investigators headed by Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren, which produced a comprehensive 889-page report concluding that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. Since then, exhaustive investigations of the assassination have been conducted, including the thorough 1976 House Select Committee on Assassinations, the definitive 1993 book on Oswald by Gerald Posner, Case Closed, and especially Vincent Bugliosi's 2007 encyclopedic tome, Reclaiming History, which addressed every single claim made by JFK conspiracy theorists. All these investigations have corroborated the original finding that Oswald acted alone. Since Oswald was himself assassinated 2 days after he killed Kennedy, there was no trial and the case was closed until 1969, when New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison put on trial as a co-conspirator a local businessman named Clay Shaw, who was alleged to have links to Oswald. As Garrison was also a JFK assassination conspiracy theorist, he hoped a trial would uncover elements within the U.S. government that had conspired to kill the president. Most likely, he figured, the CIA in cahoots with the military-industrial complex, because Kennedy wanted to get out of Vietnam. In a very real and terrifying sense, Garrison proclaimed, our government is the CIA and the Pentagon, with Congress reduced to a debating society. Unfortunately for Garrison, the jury acquitted Shaw in under an hour. Conspiracy theories swirling around the president's assassination arose from day one, but interest was reignited after Watergate eroded public trust in the government in the early 1970s. Then the Zapruder film was made public in 1975 so everyone could see the president's head jolt back and to the left as if the bullet came from the grassy knoll to the president's right instead of behind, where Oswald was located in the Book Depository building. So in 1976, the government reopened the case when the House Select Committee on Assassinations hired 250 investigators and spent $5.5 million and 30 months to get to the bottom of who really killed JFK. After issuing a colossal 12-volume report, the committee concluded that Oswald was guilty and that no agency within the U.S. government was involved. The only tidbit conspiracy theorists got out of the report was that it concluded a fourth bullet was fired. But that was based on an audio tape from the Dictabelt recording device on one of the police motorcycles in Dealey Plaza, later determined to have happened a full minute after the assassination, after the president's motorcade was gone, and was not even the sound of a gunshot. A decade later, in 1986, London Weekend Television set up a mock trial in which Vincent Bugliosi, famous as the prosecutor who convicted Charles Manson, posthumously tried Lee Harvey Oswald. Oswald was defended in absentia by the equally famous defense attorney, Jerry Spence. After a 20-hour trial, the jury deliberated for 6 hours before convicting Oswald as the lone assassin. Case closed. In the mind of the public, however, the case is still not closed. Polls taken since the mid-1960s have consistently found that at least half of all Americans believe that there was more than one shooter in Dealey Plaza. A 1997 Fox News poll found that a little over half of Americans consider it either very likely or somewhat likely that U.S. officials were directly involved in the president's death. A 2003 ABC News poll found that only 32% of American adults believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. A 2006 Gallup poll found that 34% of Americans specifically believed that the CIA was involved. A 2009 CBS News poll reported that between 60 and 80% of Americans said they believe JFK was killed by a cabal of assassins. And a 2016 Chapman University survey found that half of all Americans believe that the government is covering up what they know about the JFK assassination. So ubiquitous are JFK assassination conspiracy theories that there's even a joke featuring a conspiracy theorist who dies and goes to heaven, where God offers to reward him for living a good life by answering any question he'd like to ask. Conspiracy theorist: who actually killed Kennedy? God: Lee Harvey Oswald, acting alone, using his own Carcano M91 rifle. Conspiracy theorist: this goes higher than I thought. Speaking to a conference of top-notch lawyers shortly after Oliver Stone's film JFK was released in 1991, Vincent Bugliosi asked how many of them did not believe the findings of the Warren Commission that JFK was killed by a lone assassin. Nearly everyone in the room raised their hands. When asked how many had seen Oliver Stone's film, roughly the same number of hands shot up. Bugliosi then asked how many of them had read the Warren Report. Quote, "It was embarrassing. Only a few people raised their hands. The overwhelming majority in the audience had formed an opinion rejecting the findings of the Warren Commission without bothering to read the commission's report. And these were professional lawyers passing judgment on a murder case, knowing next to nothing about it." There has been so much published on the JFK assassination that I could fill all 12 lectures of this course with nothing but different conspiracy theories. And once you go down that rabbit hole, a problem becomes apparent. Most of the theories contradict each other, and none have identified a second shooter, much less a conspiring organization. For example, those who think organized crime was behind the assassination are in conflict with those who think it was orchestrated by the FBI. If you think the CIA did it, then it can't have been done by the CIA's Russian opposite, the KGB. Oliver Stone's film, JFK, implicates just about everyone, including the Dallas Police Department, the Secret Service, Vice President Lyndon Johnson, the FBI, the CIA, the KGB, Fidel Castro, anti-Castro Cuban exiles, organized crime, and especially the military-industrial complex. If everything is a conspiracy and everyone a conspiracist, then nothing is explained. My own opinion on the matter has changed over time. When I hadn't read much on the subject, I just assumed that the Warren Commission report that Oswald acted alone was correct. But after I saw Oliver Stone's film, JFK, I came to suspect that there might be more to the story, and possibly even a real conspiracy to assassinate the president. That's the power of film. And who can forget Kevin Costner's character, Jim Garrison, running the Zapruder film over and over for the jury, showing Kennedy's head snap back and to the left, back and to the left. But after I read Gerald Posner's and Vincent Bugliosi's books, I changed my mind and reverted to the lone assassin theory, which was later reconfirmed for me after I edited a special edition of Skeptic magazine on the 50th anniversary of the assassination in 2013, in which we debunked the most common conspiracy theories. So, let's start this analysis with Lee Harvey Oswald, whom even most conspiracy theorists agree was involved in the shooting of the president. There are entire books, documentaries, and dramatic films about Oswald, by far the best by PBS Frontline, titled "Who Was Lee Harvey Oswald?" But here are the core facts that implicate him. Oswald joined the U.S. Marines in the 1950s, where he received riflery training. Contrary to what Oliver Stone has one of his characters say in the film, that Oswald shot Maggie's drawers, meaning he couldn't even hit the target, In fact, Oswald scored the second highest rating possible in riflery, meaning he was a sharpshooter. And if you ever get a chance to go to Dealey Plaza and visit the sixth floor of the Book Depository building, which is now a museum, you can look out the sniper's nest window and see just how close a shot it was to the president, marked by two white X's in the highway below. Politically, Oswald was an avowed communist who defected to Russia in 1959, worked in a radio factory in Minsk for 2 years, and married a Russian woman named Marina. After he grew disenchanted with the USSR, he moved back to the United States in 1962 to Dallas, Texas, shortly after telling friends that he wanted to move to Cuba to join Castro's communist revolution. This background helps establish a motive for killing JFK. Kennedy was avowedly anti-communist, and after the failed Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba, also clearly anti-Cuban and anti-Castro. Temperamentally, Oswald was emotionally unhinged and suffered from delusions of grandeur, telling people he had ambitions to one day do something to make himself famous. He was very likely a psychopath. While in Dallas, Oswald encountered the anti-communist crusader Edwin A. Walker, a retired general who once accused the Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren of plotting to destroy the United States by banning prayer in schools and promoting civil rights for minorities. In April of 1963, just 8 months before he assassinated Kennedy, Oswald attempted to assassinate General Walker by shooting at him from 100 feet outside his home. Walker was struck with bullet fragments to his forearm and survived, and after the Kennedy assassination, it was determined that Oswald used the same firearm for both, an Italian-made 6.5-millimeter caliber Mannlicher Carcano bolt-action rifle, which he purchased by mail order in March of 1963. Along with a Smith & Wesson 38 revolver, leaving a paper trail investigators later found. That same Mannlicher Carcano rifle was found with Oswald's fingerprints on it in the sniper's nest on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building. After Oswald tried to kill General Walker, he told his wife Marina what he had done, and according to her, he also planned to assassinate Richard Nixon when the former vice president and future president visited Dallas, but she locked him in the bathroom to stop him. That summer of 1963, Oswald joined a pro-Castro organization called Fair Play for Cuba, and he was arrested for getting into fights with anti-Castro Cubans, further evidence of his violent tendencies. In September 1963, after his wife talked him out of hijacking a plane to Cuba, Oswald traveled to Mexico City in order to procure a visa to return to the USSR and visit Cuba along the way. At the Soviet embassy, he encountered three undercover KGB agents who later reported that Oswald seemed unhinged, so they put him off. Oswald then returned to Dallas, where on October 16th, he started work at the Texas School Book Depository building. Conspiracy theorists have made much of the fact that the building was on Kennedy's parade route, but that route wasn't determined until the week before the president's visit to Dallas, well after Oswald got the job there. Co-workers saw Oswald on the sixth floor of the Book Depository building shortly before JFK's motorcade arrived, and saw him exit shortly after the assassination. The sniper's nest on the sixth floor of the Book Depository building was constructed out of boxes which had Oswald's fingerprints on them. Three bullet casings were found in the sniper's nest indicating that he took three shots. This matches what 81% of witnesses in Dealey Plaza reported hearing, three shots. Subsequent tests of the Mannlicher Carcano rifle found that three shots are possible in the 8 seconds that Oswald had to shoot. In fact, several sharpshooters bettered Oswald's time for 3 shots. The 3 shell casings found in the sniper's nest carry distinct ballistic markings on them, showing that they were fired from Oswald's rifle, and the 1 recovered bullet at the Parkland Memorial Hospital, where Kennedy and Texas Governor John Connally were taken, showed matching ballistic markings, indicating that it had been fired from that rifle. After killing Kennedy, Oswald went home and picked up his .38 Smith & Wesson revolver and left again. Shortly after, he was stopped by Dallas patrolman J.D. Tippett. Oswald shot him dead with 4 bullets, an act witnessed by 10 observers, and the bullet casings at the scene matched his .38 Smith & Wesson. Oswald then fled the scene and ducked into a nearby theater without paying. The police were summoned to the theater, where they confronted Oswald. Oswald pulled out his revolver and attempted to shoot the first officer, but the gun failed, and he was arrested, saying, "Well, it's all over now." Actually, it was all over for Oswald on Sunday, November 24th, when a Dallas nightclub operator named Jack Ruby walked into the Dallas police headquarters as Oswald was being transferred to the city jail and shot him dead at point-blank range. In yet another eerie coincidence, Oswald was rushed to Parkland Hospital and pronounced dead 2 days to the hour after President Kennedy died in that same hospital. So there's no doubt whatsoever that Lee Harvey Oswald shot John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and anyone who would join a Fair Play for Oswald committee needs a reality check. What conspiracists contend is that someone else, or several others, also shot Kennedy, or conspired to order the hit, or bankrolled the job, or orchestrated the shooters in Dealey Plaza, or something. Since there is no solid evidence fingering anyone else besides Oswald, conspiracists have to go anomaly hunting to find something that does not quite seem to fit the lone assassin theory. What should we do with such anomalies? Nothing. No theory explains everything, and here our conspiracy maxim applies. Never attribute to malice what can be explained by incompetence or chance. A perfect example of this is the man who shot Oswald, Jack Ruby, who has also been a prime suspect for conspiracists, particularly because of his affiliation with the mob. In fact, Ruby told investigators exactly why he shot Oswald, in order to save Mrs. Kennedy the discomfiture of coming back to trial. He said his decision was a spur-of-the-moment thing, after recovering from 2 days of grief-stricken crying, saying of Kennedy, whom he loved as his president, that he did not understand how a great man like that could be lost. Those who knew Ruby described him as temperamental and periodically violent. Here's how Vincent Bugliosi summarizes what many people said about Oswald's assassin. Quote, FBI agents may have interviewed close to 100 people who knew Ruby well, and in their published reports, the reader would be hard-pressed to find one interviewee who did not mention Ruby's temper, or at least how very emotional he was. So much of conspiracy theorizing depends on eyewitness accounts, but we know from decades of research that memories are not an accurate, high-fidelity recording of events. As the psychologist Elizabeth Loftus has shown in experimental settings and real-world cases, people's memories can be easily manipulated by simple suggestion. In eyewitnesses to an automobile accident, for example, the choice of adjectives used to describe it, smashed instead of collided, influenced the witnesses' estimates of the speed at which they remembered the cars traveling. Loftus's most famous experiment involved planting a false memory in an adult of getting lost in a mall as a child. A third of her subjects remembered being lost in the mall, most filling in rich details of what the mall looked like, what people were wearing, what happened and when, and even the emotions of being lost and then found. This for an event that never even happened. Emotionally charged events distort memory even more, and being present during the assassination of a president whose head is blown open by a bullet surely counts as an emotional event. This is probably why spectators in Dealey Plaza gave such differing accounts of what happened. Some heard shots from behind Kennedy's limousine, while others thought they heard shots from in front or to the right on the grassy knoll. Three witnesses said the shots came from inside the president's car. Another witness said that she saw some men in plain clothes shooting back, which never happened. An early press bulletin reported that one of Kennedy's Secret Service agents had been killed, also untrue. According to the Dallas Morning News reporter, Hugh Ainsworth, who was at Dealey Plaza and saw the assassination, quote, "Even then, people were making things up. I remember interviewing a young couple where the guy was telling me that he had seen this and he had seen that. And his wife said, 'You didn't see that. We were back in the parking lot when it happened.' Even then." Nevertheless, 81% of eyewitnesses reported hearing three shots, whereas only 5% said they heard four shots. Most JFK conspiracy theories depend on four shots. Directionality is another matter entirely, as experts on firearm investigation say it is very difficult to determine the directionality of shots from sound alone. Add to that factor that Dealey Plaza is a small environment encased with buildings and walls that cause echoes, and yet only a handful of people said that they'd heard shots from more than one direction. Then there's the Parkland medical observations made by the attending physicians and nurses who could not seem to agree on the directionality of the bullets from the nature of the wounds. The throat looked like an entrance wound, some said, thereby placing the shooter in front, not behind Kennedy. Someone else reported that it was the back of the head blown off, not the side above the ear, as the Warren report says, and so on. But a more formal autopsy of the body after Kennedy's body was returned to Washington, D.C., determined that both shots entered his back and head from behind, the first exiting his throat and hitting Governor Connally, and the second indicating bullet and skull fragments from back to front. The weirdest anomaly of all was the umbrella man, whom we met in Lecture 4. Louis Stephen Witt went to Dealey Plaza to protest Kennedy, holding his umbrella as a sign of political protest based on the fact that JFK's father, Joseph Kennedy, was a supporter of the British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, who often carried an umbrella and went down in history as the man who appeased Hitler. Conspiracists have obsessed over the umbrella man's role in the assassination. But as Witt told the House Select Committee on Assassinations, quote, "I think if the Guinness Book of World Records had a category for people who were at the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong thing, I would be number one in that position, without even a close runner-up." Then there's the Zapruder film, unquestionably the most analyzed recording of a murder in history. It was shot by the Dallas clothing manufacturer Abraham Zapruder, who was perched atop a 4.5-foot-tall concrete pillar with his 8mm movie camera to capture his president rolling past. "This is the key shot," says Kevin Costner's character in JFK. "Watch it again. The president going back to his left, shot from the front and right, totally inconsistent with the shot from the depository." Was it? Our intuitions about how bullets and bodies interact would make it seem so. And that's what happens in the movies, which is where most of us get our knowledge about firearms. But numerous studies since have shown that what is seen in the Zapruder film is exactly what happens to a person when shot from behind. Let's consider the three shots that Oswald took. According to Dale Myers, a computer animator who has produced an exact simulation of the Zapruder film, at frame 160, the first shot is fired, and Governor Connally starts to turn to his right. Later, he said he thought that the shot came from behind. At frame 224, you can see Connally's jacket pop out as Oswald's second shot entered Kennedy's back, emerged from his throat, and then struck Connally. In frame 225, you can see Kennedy's anguished look on his face and his hands go up toward his throat in response to that second shot. Both men were hit by the same bullet, which conspiracists call the magic bullet theory, but forensic analysts call the single bullet theory. Here's another example of misinformation fueling a conspiracy theory. The assumptions conspiracists make is that Kennedy and Connally were perfectly lined up in the limousine with their seats at the same height. So a bullet fired from the sixth floor of the Book Depository building would have had to enter Kennedy's back, exit his throat, make a right turn, then a left turn, and then enter Connally. Clearly impossible. But as Myers shows in his reenactment, based on the plans for Kennedy's limo, Connally was sitting on a small jump seat placed a few inches to Kennedy's left and 3 inches lower than the president, which means a shot from the sniper's nest was at an angle that perfectly matches the wounds in Kennedy and Connally without any magical twists and turns of the bullet. As Myers concludes, the single bullet theory is really the single bullet fact. By the way, conspiracists claim that the bullet recovered at the Parkland Hospital was pristine. Evidence, they say, that it was planted by operatives there, who were apparently so dumb they didn't bother to bang up the bullet a little. In fact, the bullet is not pristine. If you look at photographs of it online, you will see that it is flattened as if it had gone through a body, which it had, two bodies, in fact. Finally, the third and fatal shot that hit Kennedy's head in frames 313 to 315, when viewed in slow motion in the digitally enhanced high-definition version readily available online, clearly shows that the shot came from behind. If you pause it at frame 313, you can clearly see skull, brain, and blood matter ejected in an upward and forward direction. I could go on and on in this vein for hours more, debunking conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory. Thousands of books have been published on the assassination, with around 95% of them skeptical of what seems obvious to me. The evidence overwhelmingly points to the conclusion that JFK was blown away by Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone. So, why the skepticism, even paranoia, about the lone assassin fact? There are at least four reasons related directly to this particular conspiracy theory, which I will end this lecture on, and another three reasons related to real conspiracies, with which I will begin the next lecture. All of these reasons serve as a heuristic for understanding why conspiracy theories have become so mainstream in the past half century. The first reason for believing in the JFK assassination conspiracy theory is cognitive dissonance. As discussed in Lecture 4, when there is a mismatch between the size or importance of an event and that of its purported cause, there is dissonance. In this case, that the most powerful person on Earth was assassinated by a lone psychopath like Lee Harvey Oswald doesn't gel. Thus, the need to balance the cognitive scales by adding conspiratorial agents, such as the FBI, the CIA, the KGB, the Cubans, the Mafia, and the military-industrial complex. The second reason is fame and popularity. This reason is summed up by Earl Warren himself, who observed, quote, "As district attorney of a large metropolitan county for years, I have no hesitation in saying that, had it not been for the prominence of the victim, the case against Oswald could have been tried in 2 or 3 days with little likelihood of any but one result." Vincent Bugliosi agrees, quote, "I've personally prosecuted several murder cases where the evidence against the accused was far more circumstantial and less robust than the case against Oswald. And the case against Oswald himself is overwhelming and relatively routine." The third reason for the popularity of the JFK assassination conspiracy theory is Camelot. When famous people die, their fans and supporters often elevate them into mythic status. After JFK's death, it was said that he had enjoyed the soundtrack from the Broadway musical Camelot, and thereafter it became a nostalgic descriptor of his administration, as in his favorite stanza, "Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment that was known as Camelot." Had Kennedy lived and served a second term, he likely would have been judged in less mythic tones. Elevated to near godlike status, however, his murder has also been elevated to mythic proportions. Finally, a fourth reason for the popularity of this conspiracy theory is politics. Arguably, the most popular of the many conspiracy theories about JFK emerged after the turmoil of the Vietnam War, when the meme spread that Kennedy had intended to withdraw the United States from involvement in that Asian quagmire. But as the conspiracy theory has it, the military-industrial complex was making so much money from prosecuting the war that they had to kill Kennedy to keep the profit machine rolling. In point of fact, the opposite is true. The same day he was killed, Kennedy was scheduled to deliver a speech at the Dallas Trademark, in which he was going to declare his commitment to keeping the U.S. involved in protecting the South Vietnamese against the communist insurgents from the North. As his brother Robert Kennedy affirmed later, quote, "The president had a strong, overwhelming reason for being in Vietnam and believed we should win the war in Vietnam because it would mean the loss of all Southeast Asia if you lost Vietnam." When asked if his brother had given any consideration to pulling out, RFK replied, curtly, "No." In the next lecture, I will have more to say about real conspiracies and how they lead people to be constructively paranoid about their government. But the point here is that we should not be surprised that in the second half of the 20th century, continuing well into the 21st century, a great many people doubt the JFK lone assassin theory for good reason. That doesn't change the mountain of facts supporting the lone assassin theory, but it does explain the continued interest, almost obsession, with this particular conspiracy theory.